Hello, and welcome to Unstuffing Our Story with me, Patrice Horsley. On today's show, I'm going to be taking the wisdom that was shared by Raymond and Steve and weaving that and linking that together in some way to help us make sense of current times. It was a little bit different with Raymond and Steve, because they were very much talking almost about storytelling as a tool, an art as a tool in bringing communities together and perhaps less attached to their own personal stories. And I think for me, that's what storytelling is all about and always has been about. It's always been about sharing oneself, sharing one's story, and creating spaces for others to do the same. And those stories making us curious about each other and curious about different ways of being. And also those old stories helping us develop empathy, helping us understand the emotions of others, and also why people do certain things. Because one thing is for sure, it's never really black and white. Raimi was talking a lot about the community in West Belfast and how there was a need for them to tell a different type of story of that area. And Steve was talking about stories giving us a vocabulary for inner experience and how do we get a better story about ourselves. And one of the things that I think really makes story one of the best tools is that thing that I've just mentioned, curiosity. Stories make us curious about people and about ourselves, about different ways of being and different ways of cooking. Let me tell you that story that Steve was talking about, the stone soup story, which is all about cooking and so much more. Stone soup. Well, stone soup, well, many variants of it from all around the world. Here in Sweden, it's not stone soup, it's actually nail soup. And in some countries, it's even axe soup. But let me go with stone soup. Stone soup usually starts with a traveller or a beggar or a soldier. So let's start it with a soldier. A soldier who has returned from the war and is tired and ragged and hungry. And he reaches a village that he had passed through when he was a soldier, when the war was still taking place. And in that village, there were still echoes of the war. You could sense them in the air between the people. For in this village, indeed, there had been some brothers who had betrayed their brothers and some sisters who had betrayed their sisters and families that had been torn apart and taken different sides. And oh, that old soldier, he could sense that. And he was tired and worn and hungry. And when he saw the people's eyes glancing away from him, when he saw the people's shoulders turning away from him, he knew that probably none of them would give him food. And so he thought, let me make them curious. And so he settled himself down in the square and he lit a small fire and he took out his own old metal pot for cooking stew in. And then as a child walked past, he said to the child, "Child, come and get me a stone. I'm going to make stone soup." And the child was confused, But the child ran off and found a stone and brought it back to the beggar man. And the child brought back his mother as well. And the mother said to the soldier, "What are you doing? You can't make soup from a stone." And the old soldier said, "Oh, you can. Let me show you." So he put the stone in his metal pot and he poured some water on top and he waited for the water to bubble. And he said to the mother and the child, "Oh, soon there'll be a great stew. But unfortunately, I forgot to bring my herbs with me. I wonder if you have some herbs." And the woman said, "Oh, I do. I'll go and get some from the garden." So the woman, curious, she went to get the herbs from her garden. And as she walked to her house, she told another neighbour, "Oh, there's a man who's making stone soup in the centre of the square, an old soldier." And the neighbour was curious. And so the neighbour turned up and the woman returned with the herbs and the soldier put the herbs in the soup. And we all know that a crowd gathers a crowd. So soon a few more people gathered round. And the soldier said, "Oh, it's going to be a great soup, especially with those herbs. What would make it even better is a few vegetables." And one of the women, she said, "Oh, I'll get some vegetables." And she went to her garden and she came back with some vegetables. And a man who was there in the crowd turned to her and said, "What kind of vegetables are those? I don't know those." And the woman said, "Oh, I bought them from my homeland when I arrived in the village as an immigrant. They're very good. Very good indeed. They're a little bit sweet and nutty." "Oh," said the man, "I didn't know that." Well, the soldier, he took the vegetables and he put them in the soup and he tasted it. He said, "Oh, yes, this is going to be perfect stone soup. If only we had something to give it a little bit of depth." One of the men stepped forward and said, "Oh, I have just the thing." And he went off and he came back with an old bottle with some stock in. And he gave it to the soldier. And one of the women said, "What's in that?" And he said, "Oh, it's a special stock that I make. It gives any stew or soup a little bit of something called umami." "Oh," said the crowd, "umami. We didn't know about that." And so the old soldier added the stock and he tasted the soup. And he said, "Oh, this is going to be utterly delicious. If only we had a little bit of bone to put in it, or even some meat or fat, that would make it the most perfect stone soup." While two or three of the people in the crowd, they dashed off to their houses and they came back with bones and with little bits of fat and some of them with some meat. And soon the pot was so full that the old soldier said, "You know what? I think I need a bigger pot so that we can all share the meal." And then one of the young women went off and brought back a most beautiful pot to put on the fire. And the crowd said, "Why, what a lovely pot." She said, "Yes, it was a wedding gift. In my culture, it is the custom always to give a pot as a wedding gift." "Oh," said the crowd, "we didn't know that." And soon all of that crowd sat down around the soldier and the soldier served them all that delicious stone soup. And as they ate the soup, they shared their stories. They leaned towards each other, curious about knowing each other a little bit better. And it was, if you had been there, the most delicious soup that you would ever have tasted in your life. So that's the story of stone soup, and you can see why Steve likes that so much, and I'm sure you can hear why I think it's a good story to tell at the moment when we're so separate from each other. And for me, food is pivotal to storytelling. Here in Sweden, there are some very interesting food customs, and I'm constantly taken aback by new ones that I didn't know about. I'm sure some of you will know that in Sweden, they have something called surströmming, which is a fermented fish that is tinned. And it's supposed to be one of the smelliest things to eat in the world. There's a lot of YouTube videos of people going to eat it. But indeed, I have been to a surströmming party at my mother-in-law's. And if you open the tin underwater or outside and then you wash off the fish and then you put it in tunnbröd, which is like a softer flatbread, and you serve it with potatoes. Indeed, it is edible, although I wouldn't have believed it at first. And they also have something called lutefisk, which is a dried fish and would have started off as cod. And then that is soaked in water and it's dried so much. It's almost the texture of cardboard. And it's not enough just to soak it in water. You have to soak it also in lye for a couple of days. And then after you've soaked it in the lye, because that makes the pH balance of the fish too high to eat and quite toxic, you then have to soak it for about 6 more days in water, changing the water regularly. And when you finally cook it, it's a little bit like a gelatinous fish. Quite tasty, but a very interesting texture. And I can remember when I moved here, just thinking, this is so weird. And saying to my husband, who's Swedish, you eat what? How can you possibly eat that? Because it wasn't my normal. And so I judged and I wasn't curious. I almost pushed away from stuff because it seemed so wrong to me to be eating fermented fish. Yet, when my husband made ugnspannkaka, which is like a toad in the hole. It's like a Yorkshire pudding, a big Yorkshire pudding, and it's not got sausages in. It's got smoked pork in, which is utterly delicious. He made that, and I thought, well, great toad in the hole, then we can have it with mashed potato and onion gravy. But he served it with jam. And I was very intrigued with this. How can you have Yorkshire pudding, toad in a hole, with jam on top? And he said to me, well, that's the tradition. And when I said to him, really, you should be having it with mashed potatoes and onion gravy, he thought that was utterly bizarre and strange. So really, the only thing that is normal is what we've experienced. And in listening to other people's stories, we can find out how many other normals there are in the world. There are so many normals in the world that we have no idea about. I think one of the most important things, I suppose, when we're sharing stories, and especially when we're sharing our own stories, is we have something to attach our stories to. Let me explain. When I moved here to Sweden, I had a whole narrative, a whole story about myself, like a spider has a thread, and a spider uses that thread to build a web, to build a new home. So I had that story of me, of being Catrice, of being a storyteller, of being the person that I was from the background that I came from, with the family that I have. But when I moved to Sweden, the only thing I had to attach my story to was my husband. And as you know, a spider needs more than one place to fasten the edges of its web, otherwise it will not support its home. And one of the things that I desperately tried to do when I moved here to Sweden was to create anchor points, friendships, find work, and find places that I could attach my story to, so I could start to build a web of belonging for my narrative, for my story, for me. It was not easy, and I'm still trying to find lodestones, trying to find points that I can stick my story to in order to create the support that I need to be me here in Sweden, doing what I do. It makes me think about children who have been in the care system and how many of those will not just miss those lodestones, those supports that they can connect their stories to, but they will also miss their story I have a strong story of myself because I was told stories about myself by my parents and grandparents and aunties and uncles and brothers and sisters and friends. They all knew me, and they would tell me stories backwards and forwards and forwards and backwards. Children and young people who have been in the care system will have missed that, will have missed having a single story told to them about themselves by parents or carers, especially if they have moved from one foster home to another or one care home to another. And it's the same with children who have arrived in countries who are immigrants and have arrived alone. They will struggle to continue with a story about themselves if there is nobody there to tell them that story. In some ways, I think it is so important that we create that web of belonging when we are forced to move or choose to move. I also think that when we're working in communities, that is essentially what we're doing. We're creating webs of belonging by the sharing of stories. And if the Somali mother shares her story with the Irish mother, and if the Palestinian man shares his story with the Israeli man, and if the Bangladeshi young woman shares her story with the Pakistani young man, then we start to build these webs of connection, these threads of connection. And the stronger those are, and the more we do it, the stronger that web of belonging will be for that community, and the more able the community will be to support the people who lay themselves upon it. Think of that. Creating webs of community, threads of community, by the sharing of stories. So, I'm inviting you to create a space in your day, in your week, for the sharing of stories. Perhaps just spending a little bit of time with a neighbour on the stairs of your flat to find out a little bit more about them. Perhaps spending a little bit of time in the shop just to speak to that person 1.5 meters in front of you in the queue, allowing them to share their story, you to share yours, so that we can all start to build up those webs and threads of belonging in a time when we can feel so distant from each other. Well, that's it for that episode. And the next episode, I'm going to be interviewing the wonderful Liz Weir from Northern Ireland, who started off her career as a librarian and now has been awarded the MBE for her services to storytelling. She is an author, she is a strong member of her community, and before COVID hit us, would have Kayleys at the hostel that she owns every Saturday night, where anybody who was staying at the travel hostel, along with all of the local people, would get together, share stories, and sing songs and play instruments. And oh, it was a wonderful, wonderful time. So she will be here in 2 weeks' time, and I hope that you will join us too as Liz Weir starts to unstuff her story with us so that we can find out more about ourselves and more about her. Remember to subscribe to the podcast, Unstuffing Our Story, and also join us on our Instagram page of the same name. Bye bye for now.